do this computer. And I got three different places I have to hit before we get started here. We should be recording while we're in. All right. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul. And tonight we're going to start a new paper, continue with our study in the Urantia book. And tonight's paper is paper 161, Further Discussions with Rodin. And that starts on page 1783 of the original Urantia book, or 16101 and all the rest. So, do y'all like this little opening picture I did today?
Yeah, it's pretty cool
That's pretty
looking.
good, didn't it? That's ChatGPT picture, believe it or not.
Be darned.
I've been doing that the hard way all these years.
Wonder which one Rodin is.
That's what I was trying to figure out. Like, we know
Probably
that's
the
Jesus, and this
guy
is
with the
probably
beard.
Nathaniel and Thomas,
That
but
guy.
I guess this guy's supposed to be Rodin. I'm not sure.
It must be.
All right. Let's see here. Let me switch slides. And just so everybody knows, Andrew, are you new to the Urantia book, or have you been reading for a while?
I am fairly new. I picked it up 20 some years ago and then put it down pretty quickly and have re-picked it up within the past year.
Yeah, well, that's
Be
good.
darned.
That's good. At least you picked it back up. When I
Yeah.
first started reading, I threw it across the room several times before. Was a good
Tell me your
hardcore.
background. Tell them your background, and you'll understand why.
Well, I was a Baptist minister, and I was indoctrinated in the theology of the Baptist faith. And when I started reading the Urantia book, and I read the part where it said that the concept of blood sacrifice was contrary to what God believes, I couldn't accept that because I'd always been taught that Jesus died for everybody's sins, and I believed it my whole life. So that whole concept of God just forgiving our sins just didn't sit well with me, you know. So I had a lot of problem with it over the time.
I have a very similar background.
Yeah. So you can understand where I was coming from. But that was 50 some years ago now, and I've come to accept it that sacrifice is not necessary, and that wasn't Jesus's mission. So a lot more to it than that. Okay, so let's get started. Since we have several readers tonight, I think I'm going to skip reading at the first and let Diane take off the first one.
Paper 161, Further Discussions with Rodin. On Sunday, September 25, AD 29, the apostles and the evangelist assembled at Magadan. After a long conference that evening with his associates, Jesus surprised all by announcing that early the next day he and the 12 apostles would start for Jerusalem to attend the Feast of the Tabernacles. He directed that the evangelist visit the believers in Galilee and that the women's corps return for a while to Bethsaida.
Okay, so Jesus got up that morning and told him, well, we're all going to head out the next day. And that's basically what happened. Now, I have to give my disclaimer at the beginning of this paper, like I did the last paper, for sure. Paper 60, 160 and 161 is not the direct teachings of Jesus. And I want to make sure that that's clear. These are mostly the teachings of Rodin and his interpretation. And now this paper is a little bit different than the last one, though, because what we get on this paper is a better explanation from the midwayers about what Rodin was trying to say. Okay, so it's pretty clear that these are Rodin's concepts. But we're going to discuss it both ways, both what Jesus would believe and what Rodin would believe. And that's what our disclaimer is. I don't want anybody to get the idea that paper 160 or 161s is the direct teachings of Jesus because it's not. Okay.
Correct.
the next paper will be from the next paper on. That's all the teachings of Jesus. And these are the only two papers in the life of Christ that I know for a fact that's the way it is, because that's what the midwayers taught us. So now that we're all clear, hi Gary, I didn't know if I said hello to you or not. Okay, and this
Hi,
is
how you
the
doing?
map of everywhere they went during this paper. Okay, Rodney, would you take the next one, please?
When the hour came to leave for Jerusalem, Nathanael and Thomas were still in the midst of their discussions with Rodin of Alexandria, and they secured the master's permission to remain at Magadan for a few days. And so, while Jesus and the 10 were on their way to Jerusalem, Nathanael and Thomas were engaged in earnest debate with Rodin the week prior, in which Rodin had expounded his philosophy. Thomas and Nathanael had alternated in presenting the gospel of the kingdom to the Greek philosopher. Rodin discovered that he had been well instructed in Jesus' teachings by one of the former apostles of John the Baptist, who had been his teacher at Alexandria.
Notice here they mention who taught him, right? One of John the Baptist's apostles. And so he did a pretty good job, apparently, of teaching Rodin the philosophy and the beliefs of Jesus. And that's why he wanted to come and discuss these things with Jesus. But Jesus did not do that with him, did he? He decided that wasn't the way it was his apostles' duty to teach. So that's why he let them do that. All right, Letch, would you take the next one?
Okay. The personality of God. There was one matter on which Rodin and the two apostles did not see alike, and that was the personality of God. Rodin readily accepted all that was presented to him regarding the attributes of God, but he contended that the Father in heaven is not, cannot be, a person as man conceives personality. While the apostles found themselves in difficulty trying to prove that God is a person, Rodin found it still more difficult to prove he is not a person.
Okay, so to Rodin, the attributes of God and the personality of God was two separate things. Okay, what you'd consider the attributes, excuse me, attributes of God would be those things that literally surround God and the way he reacts to things, his actions. That would be more like the Son, right? The eternal Son. But his personality itself, Rodin had found difficult to understand how a deity personality could be anything even remotely close to a human personality. And one of the things he did not understand is the fact that all personality comes from God, and that includes the personality that's bestowed by the infinite spirit on all the angelic core. That originates from God, even though the infinite spirit, puts that personality out through the local universe mother spirits. But we got to remember that all personality, both finite, parental, and spiritual, originates from God the Father. Now, what Rodin had a difficult time of understanding is that God had a personality separate from being the source of personality. Does that make sense to y'all? Kind of? Am I losing everybody already? And here's a picture of
Oh,
stuff.
well, he's the total of personality.
Total personality. And this is a hard concept to understand, because we know that God the Father is not pantheistic, right? God the Father is not in the table and the chair and all this other stuff, but God the Father is panentheistic. And what does that mean? That means that everything exists within God the Father. Okay, so all that exists, everything that will exist now, forever will exist, is within the purview of God the Father. But that does not mean that God the Father is in everything like this microphone, this computer, or that sort of thing. Okay, we all exist within that shell. All right. Stephanie, would you take the next one, please?
Rodin contended that the fact of personality consists in the coexistent fact of full and mutual communication between beings of equality, beings who are capable of sympathetic understanding. Said Rodin, in order to be a person, God must have symbols of spirit communication which would enable him to become fully understood by those who make contact with him. But since God is infinite and eternal, the creator of all other beings, it follows that, as regards being of equality, God is alone in the universe. There are none equal to him. There are none with whom he can communicate as an equal. God indeed may be the source of all personality, but as such, he is transcendent to personality, even as the creator above and beyond the creature.
Okay, y'all know this answer to this question I'm going to ask. Who is equal to God? Y'all know this. The
No.
Son.
Well, the
Well,
Son
wait
is
a minute.
spirit, but.
Right? And the Spirit. There's three persons that are equal in
Okay.
equal. In other words, God can communicate equally with another being, and that's the Son and the Spirit. That's where he's in error here. Okay. Even though God is the first source and center, the second source and center, which is the Son, and the third source and center, the infinite Spirit, are equals in communication because they are part of the what? Deity head, which is the Trinity. Okay. Nothing is done in the universe outside the Trinity. Okay, even though God the Father is the source of personality, does any being get personality outside the Trinity? No. It has to come through the Paradise Trinity. Okay, even though God is the source. All right, that's hard to understand, I know. All right, Andrew, would you like to read?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Can I ask a quick question there? I don't
Yes,
know
that's
if
what
we're
we're here
talking.
for. Please do.
And again, I just have not read a lot, but if Jesus is co-equal with God, are the other, I don't know what they're called, paradise sons or whatever, are they also equal with God the Father? Because I thought at the beginning of Urantia talks about multiple, maybe 600 or something different sons that have gone.
700,000.
Okay.
700,000 creator sons. Yes.
Aren't they all equal just like Jesus slash Michael is?
They are all equal with God as paradise sons of God. Yes. And the reason they are equal is because they all come from God the Father and the eternal Son, which is the one in the Trinity. Jesus was not part of the Trinity. He allowed the apostles to think that he was part of the Trinity because they could not grasp the concept of the Trinity. Okay. But Jesus was not equal to God in the sense that the eternal Son was. But because he is in the direct line of divinity, like all other 699,000 creator sons, he is equal to God in that sense. Also, he's equal to God in the sense that he created everything being, everything that's going on in our local universe of Nebadon. So that makes him equal with God in that sense. Okay, so it's totally right to call God, to call Jesus God, all right, because he's in the direct line of divinity. That's why we can call him God. Does that make sense?
Yes,
You
thank
know,
you.
it's a lot of stuff to grasp at one spoonful, but
Yeah.
keep asking questions because other people don't know that, you know, we get people that watch the videos that have never heard of any of this. So
Yeah.
Yeah, they're.
My simple Christianity is hard baked into my DNA, so
That's I was
it's
the
gonna
same
take
way.
a little
I know
while.
exactly
But
where you're coming from.
so I can read this. This contention greatly troubled Thomas and Nathaniel, and they had asked Jesus to come to their rescue, but the master refused to enter into their discussions. He did say to Thomas, "It matters little what idea of the Father you may entertain, as long as you are spiritually acquainted with the ideal of his infinite and eternal nature."
Did y'all catch that? It didn't matter what your idea of the Father is. So that includes all religions, whether you're Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, well, not Buddhist because they don't believe in a God, but any religion you can think of that has the idea of the God the Father, that is fine. You don't have to, you have to be 100% acquainted with the ideal. What is the ideal of his infinite and eternal nature? That is the fact that he is the original I am, and that he is the first source of, and center of all, everything. Okay? That would be the ideal. But the idea of God the Father's being the head of everything, including the Trinity and the sons of God, that is all that matters. If you get that, you got the most of the big banana, as they say, right?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, Gary, go ahead.
All these people that are Buddhists, would they be allowed to go into heaven? Because I believe the requirement for entering into heaven is the belief in God
The belief in
and not to
God,
have an evil spirit, basically.
but Gary, there is a caveat to that, okay? Not only do they have to call it God, okay, but they could believe in an ultimate source, and most Buddhists do believe that. So, in my
So,
opinion, this is just my opinion. I'm not basing this on anything but my knowledge of 50 years of studying the Urantia Book. But in my opinion, those people that believe in this higher source will wake up on the mansion world, and they'll be in remedial classes because they will be totally blind as to everything on going on in the cosmos. Okay, they believe that they're going to meld into this ultimate source as one, which is not correct. Okay, but what is not incorrect, if they believe in a higher source and they believe in their own survival, they will probably wake up on the mansion worlds and be totally deaf, dumb, and blind, in essence, as far as spiritual things go. It's kind of funny. I was working on a video this afternoon about how being p people refuse to believe cosmic reality. If you don't believe in cosmic reality of the way things are, how are you going to wake up to even recognize it? You see what I'm saying? It's an interesting question. But I don't believe personally that beings or people who think along the line of their own salvation will be shut out of the mansion worlds because of ignorance. Says you can't not go to heaven because of ignorance.
Correct.
Right? We're not talking about being stupid. We're talking about being ignorant. Okay? You can take someone who's ignorant and you can train them. Someone that's totally stupid, you know what I always say about that, don't you? What is it? You can't fix stupid, right? You have to be willing to learn. Okay, let's go on. Gary, would you take the next one?
Thomas contended that God does communicate with man, and therefore that the Father is a person, even within the definition of Rodin. This the Greek rejected on the grounds that God does not reveal himself personally, that he is still a mystery. Then Nathaniel appeared to his own personal experience with God, and that Rodin allowed, affirming that he had recently had similar experiences, but these experiences, he contended, proved only the reality of God, not his personality.
Okay, what's he talking about here, y'all? He's talking about Nathaniel can relate his own personal experience with his relationship with God the Father within him in the thought adjuster, right? And Rodin allowed that because he had similarly had an experience himself. But he says here that he didn't contend that that was, that only proves the reality that God exists, not his personality. Okay, so we're going to go on with this here in the next couple of paragraphs. All right, I guess I'm up again. By Monday night, Thomas gave up. But by Tuesday night, Nathaniel had won Rodin to believe in the personality of the Father, and he effected this change in the Greek's view of the following steps of reasoning. So he convinced him of the personality of God eventually. Okay, these are the reasons why. Diane.
1. The Father in paradise does enjoy equality of communication with at least two other beings who are fully equal to himself and wholly like himself, the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit. In view of the doctrine of the Trinity, the Greek was compelled to concede the personality possibility of the universal Father. It was the latter consideration of these discussions, which led to the enlarged conception of the Trinity in the minds of the 12 apostles. Of course, it was the general belief that Jesus was the eternal Son.
You're muted, Roger.
Sorry, I'll forget to unmute when Diane's on. This is what I was talking about earlier, that the apostles believed that Jesus was the second person of the Trinity, didn't they?
Correct.
Okay, and he allowed them to believe that because he had such a difficult time just teaching them about the Trinity and who the eternal Son was. You know, it's kind of interesting too, because the eternal Son is Jesus's father also, right?
That's true.
Because Jesus was created by both God the Father and the eternal Son. So both of them are his father, father, mother. Okay. So that's kind of interesting. All right. So there's two other beings that God is equal to. And who is that? The eternal Son and infinite Spirit. Okay. And Rodin could understand this. All right. Next one, Rodney, would you take number two?
Yes, 2. Since Jesus was equal with the Father, and since the Son had achieved the manifestation of personality to his earth children, such a phenomena constituted proof of the fact and demonstration of the possibility of the possession of personality by all three of the Godheads, and forever settle the question regarding the ability of God to communicate with man and the possibility of man's communicating with God.
So he accepted the fact that they all three had personality, and since they all three had personality, divinity can have separate personality then.
Correct.
Right? Since there was three of them. All right, Letch, would you take the next one, please?
Okay, that Jesus was on terms of mutual association and perfect communication with man, that Jesus was the Son of God, that the relation of Son and Father presupposes equality of communication and mutuality of sympathetic understanding, that Jesus and the Father were one, that Jesus maintained at one and the same time understanding, communication with both God and man, and that since both God and man comprehended the meaning of the symbols of Jesus's communication, both God and man possess the attributes of personality insofar as the requirements of the ability of intercommunication were concerned. That the personality of Jesus demonstrated the personality of God, while it proved conclusively the presence of God in man, that two things which are related to the same thing are related to each other.
Okay, so we all come to the understanding that man has a personality and God has a personality. God's personality is intertwined with divinity, and the problem is here that Jesus's personality was also what? Intertwined with divinity. Okay, so Jesus was divine, even as his person as a human being, he was still the Creator Son, so that made him divine. So he was a combination of both human and divine, where we're just human. Now, I want to mention something here too about personality, because it becomes very important that we understand. It says in the Urantia book that animals do not have personality. Okay, we give them personality all the time, but they do not have the personality as man does have personality because of what? They only have the first five agent mind spirits, not worship and wisdom. So if they possessed worship and wisdom, they would too have personality, but they don't. So they say have something other than personality that they get from the creative mother spirit, okay, through the mind circuit. All right, so I want to make sure that's clear. That's why animals also do not have a soul. Since they do not have personality, there is nothing there, no thought adjuster there to communicate with that personality to build the soul. And we know we can't go to the mansion worlds without what?
The soul,
A soul,
which is Marancho.
which is Marantia. It's outside of human. Okay, so that's a pretty heavy duty stuff. I've done whole videos on just that, but the fact is, since the animals do not have a soul, if we see them in the mansion worlds, it's because they've been reconstituted as they are in the afterlife from what they were in this life. You see what I'm saying? They don't have a soul that goes on forever. You can't have a soul that goes on forever without what? The father fragment or the thought adjuster. Since these animals have nothing to fuse with, they won't la last. They won't live through eternity. They may live long, long periods of time, but they may not live through eternity like we do. Does that make sense? All right. Now we got that all clear. Y'all are smarter than most people in the world. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Stephanie, I think you're up next.
Four, that personality represents man's highest concept of human reality and divine values. That God also represents man's highest concept of divine reality and infinite values. Therefore, that God must be a divine and infinite personality, a personality in reality, although infinitely and eternally transcending man's concept and definition of personality, but nevertheless, always and universally a personality.
Okay, so God is a personality, right? He has divine values, but he's still a personality. Andrew, would you take the next one, please?
That God, can you hear me on this?
Yes, I sure can.
Okay, good. That God must be a personality since he is the creator of all personality and the destiny of all personality. Rodin had been tremendously influenced by the teaching of Jesus. Be you therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect.
So, since Rodin heard this command to be perfect from Jesus, he understood that Jesus's perfectionness in his life comes from his relationship with God the Father, and that allows us the opportunity to strive for perfection in our personality during our life, right? We can't ex really expect to be perfect all the time. We're just not built that way. We're going to make errors. But that is our goal, daily goal, is to try to be as perfect as possible, even as God is perfect. All right. Gary, would you take the next one?
When Rodin heard these arguments, he said, "I am convinced. I will confess God as a person if you will permit me to qualify my confession of such a belief by attaching to the meaning of personality a group of extended values such as superhuman, transcendent, supreme, infinite, eternal, final, and universal. I am now convinced that while God must be infinitely more than a personality, he cannot be anything less. I am satisfied to end the argument and to accept Jesus as the personal revelation of the Father and the satisfaction of all unsatisfied factors in logic, reason, and philosophy.
You can tell where he's coming from, can't you? Right? That good old philosophic training. All right.
He was a smart guy.
He was a smart guy. The divine nature of Jesus, since Nathaniel and Thomas had so fully approved Rodin's view of the gospel of the kingdom, there remained only one more point to consider. The teaching dealing with the divine nature of Jesus, a doctrine only so recently publicly announced. Nathaniel and Thomas jointly presented their views of the divine nature of the Master, and the following narrative is a condensed, rearranged, and restated presentation of their teachings. Notice that the midwayers qualify what they're saying here. Okay. It's not direct from the horse's mouth, as they say. But remember, too, that the doctrine of Jesus's divinity did not come out until just recently, right before this. Okay, so up to this point, the apostles did not understand the divinity, how Jesus could be divine and human, too, and they did not understand that until Mount Hermon. Okay. After Mount Hermon, they saw him glorified. They realized he really was a divine being other than just being a human being. All right. Let's go on. Diane, I think.
One, Jesus has admitted his divinity, and we believe him. Many remarkable things have happened in connection with his ministry, which we can understand only by believing that he is the Son of God as well as the Son of Man.
So the many things that they had seen and experienced with Jesus, he could only be understood by being divine and human. Okay? That's what they're saying here.
Can I ask a ridiculous question?
There's no such thing, Gary. Go ahead and ask.
You haven't heard my question.
Gary, I've known you for a long
I
time
have.
now, and I have never heard a ridiculous question from you.
Hard time with the phrase "son of man." To me, the son is an offspring of man.
Or his
My
father.
son's was my offspring, okay? To
Yeah.
me, man would be the offspring of Jesus. So somehow that phrase should be turned around.
Okay, let me tell you why he uses Son of Man. First of all, his biological father was Joseph, right?
Yes.
Any way you look at it, it was his Joseph's DNA, his sperm, it was Mary's egg, came together. These are things that have been discussed for hundreds of years in the Catholic Church. Of course, they don't believe that, but that's what happens. That's what the Urantia book teaches us. It was a normal, just like every other thing. The thing that was different is the fact that the soul of Jesus, or that which makes Jesus who he is, was inserted into this embryo and fertilized egg, basically. Okay.
Well, the personality,
Yeah, well, the
Michael's
personality of Jesus, that's
personality.
right. The thing of it is, though, the reason he came to earth was his seventh bestowal, right? To experience being a human from beginning to end, unknowing that he was a divinity from the time he was born till about 30. Okay. So, in order for that to happen, he had to be totally unaware of his divinity up to that point because he wouldn't have gained the experience of being a human being unless he actually went through the process himself. Now, at age 30, remember when we studied about the baptism, and at age 30, he could have ended his bestowal right then? Okay, because he was done experiencing everything of a human life with the exception of what? Death,
Death.
right? That's the only thing he was missing. So he had finished his bestowal, and according to the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit, they were satisfied that he had gone through all seven bestowals and he was finished as far as they were concerned. Okay, now the Son of Man part, by him taking the title of Son of Man, he was relating to all beings that would come after this the fact that he was not just a divine being, he was the son of Joshua ben Joseph also. So he was the son of a man, even though he was the creator of the local universe.
Now I understand.
Now you understand? That's why he had that title.
I
He
think so.
chose that title of Son of Man because he didn't want to discount his bestowal charge for any reason. Okay? That's why he took the Son of Man. We all clear?
Andrew has a question.
Yeah, Andrew, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, and it wasn't exactly on that, but you said the seventh bestowal of Jesus. What
Right.
is that? Because I didn't,
You
I've
haven't
heard that
gotten to that
phrase.
yet.
Well, I've heard the phrase, I think, but,
Yeah.
and funny enough, when I started reading this, I think I read, started at like paper 159 or something. And I'm currently at the crucifixion, which is like 192 or so.
Okay.
This is where I just started reading. I haven't read the first 150 papers, but so
Okay.
what is the seventh bestowal?
Well, Andrew, I have written a whole entire book that I can send you the download for free so that you can read it if you'd like to. But the seventh bestow Jesus did seven bestowals before he came to earth. This is from pay this that goes all the way through them on paper 119. Am I right on that, Rodden? I think it was 119.
I don't know.
I skip around on these papers so much I lose their thing, but I'm pretty sure it's paper 119. And you can go read that paper. It's not but an hour long, but it goes through the seven bestowals of Jesus, what kind of beings he was, and that sort of thing. Jesus became one of almost every type of being that him and the local universe Mother Spirit created. So by doing this, he gained the experience of all the types of beings that he created personally.
So if sorry, so this is like seven like reincarnations kind of because
Yeah,
I
in essence,
okay.
the difference is the first six, he was totally aware he was Michael of Nebadon. He was the creator's son for the first six. Okay. He basically became that type of being, lived a whole life as that type of being, but he was aware of who he was during the whole process of the first six. When he became human, he was not aware that he was pre-existent and that he was God of the local universe. Okay. It was only during the seventh bestowal that that happened, when he
Thank you.
became
Very
human.
fascinating. Can I make
Also,
a comment that may make it clearer to him?
yeah, go ahead, Gary.
Jesus, to become the absolute ruler of Nebadon, our universe, he had to go through these bestowals. And you can look at it as on-the-job training, so he understood all that he understood, all he governed, I should say. And once he was convinced God that he was versed in all things and experienced his life on earth as a human, which we are the lowliest,
The lowest type of creature, yes. Yeah.
basically was set in earth terms. It's like a man, the father turning over business to his son, but making him start at the bottom so he understands everything.
Yeah, now this is a requirement, Andrew, with every creator son of every local universe. So all the creator sons must do the same seven bestowal process. And when they've done all seven bestowals, they become master sons. And as master sons, they're granted total control of their local universe. And that's how they gain that ability to rule their
Thank you.
entire local universe. And all 700,000 creator sons have to go through the same exact process. They start at the top, work all the way down. Now, this is not a short little thing. This took over 1.5 million years to go through. So it's quite a commitment, as they say. His 36 years on this planet is the shortest one of all of the bestowals. So.
And in each it was like a dual bestowal because in each bestowal he experienced one of God the sevenfold.
That's true. You know, in each one of the bestowals, he tried to relate or impersonate one of the combination of the seven deities of God the Father, seven combinations of God the Father. So each bestowal had a specific person. In our bestowal, the bestowal on earth, he was to relate the will of God the Father himself, the very last one. So that's what all that was about. But go out to paper 119 tomorrow, the next day, and just read the whole thing. It's real. You're going to really be surprised. It's interesting.
Sure,
So,
I am.
yeah. All right. And if nothing else, go. I'll try to send you a copy of my electronic version of my book. It's pretty long, though. I go into great detail about the seven of the souls. So, all
I
right.
would like a copy of that book as well. That
Oh,
sounds
it
really
just def
intriguing. Yeah.
oh, yeah, okay. I'll send y'all both one out. You know, I sent it out to everybody that was on our mailing list back when I got done with all four of my books. So I'll send y'all links to all four of them. Okay.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, I have so many other questions, but I don't want to derail this because this is obviously my first time, and I don't know how these things go, but I have so many questions.
Well, Andrew, anytime I work at the computer every day, just about all day every day. Anytime you can call me and we can link up by Zoom and you can spend as long as you need, you just ask questions, okay?
That sounds good. Thank you.
All right, but if you come up with questions while we're going through this, please stop and ask them. We don't mind.
Yeah.
You know, we've been doing this a
Oh, absolutely.
long time. As they said.
And
All
we
right.
learn from the questions too.
You do.
Yes,
Everybody
we do.
learns from them, right? And those at home that are listening have never, you know, have no idea what the book's about, learn from these questions also.
That's
All
right.
right. Now, I am totally lost. Who was supposed to
I
read
think
what?
it's my turn.
Your turn? Okay. Is this the right slide for you,
Yes.
Rodney? Did we read this? Okay.
Yeah, two. His life association with us exemplifies the ideal of human friendship. Only a divine being could possibly be such a human friend. He is the most truly unselfish person we have ever known. He is the friend of even sinners. He dares to love his enemies. He is very loyal to us. While he does not hesitate to reprove us, it is plain to all that he truly loves us. The better you know him, the more you will love him. You will be charmed by his unswerving devotion. Through all these years of our failure to comprehend his mission, he has been a faithful friend. While he makes no use of flattery, he does treat us all with equal kindness. He is invariably tender and compassionate. He has shared his life and everything else with us. We are a happy community. We share all things in common. We do not believe that a mere human could live such a blameless life under such trying circumstances.
So what does that tell us? That Jesus lived the perfect life, didn't he?
Sounds like he'd be a cool person to know.
Great guy to hang out with, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Really would. You know, it's kind of funny. When you read this book, unlike the Bible, the New Testament, when you read the New Testament, it does not, the love, the compassion, companionship and all these other things do not come out of the Bible, do they? But when you read it in this book, Jesus really does become your best friend.
It
that's the
shows his
difference.
personality.
It's the personality of Jesus. That's exactly right. All right. Letch, would you take the next one? Can you read that okay, Letch?
Yes, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay.
We think Jesus is divine because he never does wrong. He makes no mistakes. His wisdom is extraordinary, his piety superb. He lives day by day in perfect accord with the Father's will. He never repents of misdeeds because he transgresses none of the Father's laws. He prays for us and with us, but he never asks us to pray for him. We believe that he is consistently sinless. We do not think that one who is only human ever professed to live such a life. He claims to live a perfect life, and we acknowledge that he does. Our piety springs from repentance, but his piety springs from righteousness. He even professes to forgive sins and does heal diseases. No mere man would sanely profess to forgive sin. That is a divine prerogative, and he has seemed to be thus perfect in his righteousness from the times of our first contact with him. We grow in grace and in the knowledge of the truth, but our master exhibits maturity of righteousness to start with. All men, good and evil, recognize these elements of goodness in Jesus, and yet never is his piety obtrusive or ostentatious. He is both meek and fearless. He seems to approve of our belief in his divinity. He is either what he professes to be, or else he is the greatest hypocrite and fraud the world has ever known. We are persuaded that he is just what he claims to be.
So they have come to the conclusion Jesus is either the divine being he claims to be, or he's totally crazy, right? And they believe that he's divine, so they don't believe he's crazy. All right. That's why so many times in the New Testament, you know, they mention the fact that people think he is was you know, had lost it, right? Because the things he did a normal person would not do. All right. And I could go on with the piety and the divinity in that paragraph for a long, long time, but I'm going to move on to the next one here because we're going to run out of time here really quick. Stephanie, would you take the next one?
4. The uniqueness of his character and the perfection of his emotional control convince us that he is a combination of humanity and divinity. He unfailingly responds to the spectacle of human need. Suffering never fails to appeal to him. His compassion is moved alike by physical suffering, mental anguish, or spiritual sorrow. He is quick to recognize and generous to acknowledge the presence of faith or any other grace in his fellow men. He is so just and fair, and at the same time so merciful and considerate. He grieves over the spiritual obstinacy of the people and rejoices when they consent to see the light of truth.
Now, is this coming from the Midwares or is this coming from Rodan? Yeah.
Well, it's coming from Thomas and Nathaniel.
Yeah.
Their description.
The description,
pretty cool.
But it's been re worked a little bit for our understanding, right? So you can see why everybody loves him so much. All right. Gosh, my screen moved around, but Andrew, would you take the next one? Then Gary, you have the next one.
One second, sorry. He seems to know the thoughts of men's minds and to understand the longings of their hearts. And he is always sympathetic with our troubled spirits. He seems to possess all our human emotions, but they are magnificently glorified. He strongly loves goodness and equally hates sin. He possesses a superhuman consciousness of the presence of deity. He prays like a man, but performs like a god. He seems to foreknow things. He even now dares to speak about his death, some mystic reference to his future glorification. While he is kind, he is also brave and courageous. He never falters in doing his duty.
Yeah, that sounds like deity to me, doesn't it, to y'all?
Yes, it does.
All right. Gary, would you take this one?
He seems constantly impressed by the phenomenon of his, we are constantly impressed by the phenomenon of his superhuman knowledge. Hardly does a day pass, but something transpires to disclose that the master knows what is going on away from his immediate presence. He also seems to know about the thoughts of his associates. He undoubtedly has communication with celestial personalities. He unquestionably lives on a spiritual plane far above the rest of us. Everything seems to be open to his unique understanding. He asks us questions to draw us out, not to gain information.
Okay, so he didn't need to ask questions to gain information. So he asked questions to the apostles to draw him out so they can ask questions. You see what they're saying here? Because he already knows. He has no reason to. All right. Recently, the master does not hesitate to assert his superhumanity. From the day of our ordination as apostles right on down to the recent times, he has never denied that he came from the Father above. He speaks with the authority of a divine teacher. The master does not hesitate to refute the religious teachings of today and to declare the new gospel with positive authority. He is assertive, positive, and authoritative. Even John the Baptist, when he heard Jesus speak, declared that he was the Son of God. He seems to be so sufficient within himself. He craves not the support or of the multitude. He is indifferent to the opinions of men. He is brave and yet so free from pride. Isn't that a great description of Jesus? I'll tell you
Sure.
what. All
Very.
right, Diane, take the next
Have
one.
you ever thought about the devotion and the courage to know when it's coming and to be willing to submit to it?
Yeah, and the fact, Gary, what amazes me more than anything else is the fact that Jesus knew that the direction he was going, that they were going to murder him, they were going to crucify him, right? And even though that was coming with all, with 144 legions of angels, he could have stopped at any time, but he
Yes, I
chose
mean it's.
not to. He chose not to so that he could experience a real total life of a human being.
And it's basically just to know the experience.
Yeah,
It's not
just
for
to
the
know the
remission
experience.
of our sins and all that stuff,
Yeah.
like we're misled over
Right.
our lives, but it's just for the simple experiencing death.
Yeah,
Okay,
experiencing
I
death and
mean, how
thinking it
much
this
love
way.
and stuff like that can you have to just
Right.
endure that? I mean,
Yeah, just
to
give
me,
up and say,
if
yeah.
you ever
Yeah.
studied how they truly crucified him,
Yeah.
they put nails between on their ankles. They didn't cross their legs. They nailed them to the side of the pole.
Yeah.
Okay,
Yeah,
and then
it's pretty. You know,
in your wrists, not your hands,
I
huh?
think the best idea of what it was really like was the Mel Gibson movie that came out a few years ago. I couldn't watch it but one time. I was crying so bad in the theater. I couldn't handle it. And
I
but
watched it once too. I
yeah,
can't
I
take it.
could once was enough. That's all I could handle. But
Great movie.
you think about it, if Jesus had 144 legions of that's 7 million angels. There was an angel there for every single human being on the planet that he could have called. That's, the restraint while they were torturing him, that is just, how could you even imagine that? All right, Diane, you want to take the next one? Wait a minute, dear.
Hometown.
We're out of time. Yeah.
Okay.
We are. Let me switch over. Okay, we're at 6:57. Let me stop the share and go over to the prayer of acceptance. All right. And who's supposed to read the prayer? You remember there? I don't either. Rodney, would you take the prayer of acceptance tonight?
Yeah, sure. I believe that God is my paradise father, and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By this same faith, I became a child of God, and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nebaton, is Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth, Amen.
Amen. And thanks everyone for joining us tonight. Let me mention something too before everybody gets off. Let me stop the recording and the feed. I need to ask both Andrew and Stephanie something. So, well, I'm thinking about it. So y'all hang on a minute. Let me just stop the recording and stop the feed here.